Howdy, I'm Zeke of Zeke's Gallery, and I would like to welcome you to this Zeke's Gallery podcast of the Heather Dale concert that happened here on April 9th, 2006, or in other words, last night. Born and raised in Toronto, Heather Dale has always had a passion for legends. Celtic mythology, European folk tales, King Arthur stories, and Native American legends. They all have influenced her music. Heather incorporates them into her songs, which are a combination of Celtic folk, blues, jazz, and many other types of music. Her voice is rich, evocative, and she uses it to combine modern themes with old melodies, or is it old themes with modern melodies? She's currently starting a six-week tour of Atlantic Canada that will take her from St. John to Rothesay. Last night she was here in Montreal at Zeke's Gallery, and we were able to get a recording of the show. The recording is volume 229 in the Live at Zeke's Gallery series and is graciously and generously funded and supported by the Zeke's Gallery Freedom Fighters and everybody who clicks on the ads. If you'd like more information on Heather Dale, her website is heatherdale.com. If you'd like more information about Zeke's Gallery, the address is 3955 Saint Laurent in Montreal.
So this is a song, well, it's a song I wrote, but it's a story from a 14th century book. From Italy, called the Decameron, and it's full of very witty, clever love stories. So, if anybody tells you that history is boring, then tell them to go read 14th century Italian stories. The young Madonna Lydia went out to take a stroll upon the arm. Dawn and Brulio, her newly wedded lord. Their serving man was Pyrrhus. That day his chance befell, and though he was the husband's man, he longed to be her man as well. Sweetly said Madonna, with a twinkle in her eye, I see a tree hung low with fruit, and oh, the highest one is ripe. The dawn looked sagely upward and nodded his assent, and so the servant stripped his shirt and hose, and up the tree he went. Up into the pear tree was handsome Pyrrhus sent, and there he thought of a clever plan, and this is how it went. When the noble pair below were seated on the ground, from up above young Pyrrhus made a show of looking shyly down. My lord, unwise to kiss your wife so boldly here, right before a servant's eyes. And Brulio was taken aback. My boy, what's that you say? My wife and I are sitting here and not entwined in Cupid's play. Said Pyrrhus, soul of innocence, my eyes may not agree, but here, come up and take my place, my lord, perhaps it is the tree. So up into the pear tree the foolish husband, while Pyrrhus thumbed the prize below and hastened his descent. There's nothing quite as pleasant as a summer's warm embrace, and when the dawn looked down, he saw the ardent lovers face to face. But true as dries the two below, said simply, what's the fuss? Just as before, a yard or more still separates the two of us. Dawn cried, it's a miracle, let's cry it in the town. But with the smile Madonna said, I think that you should cut it down. What good's a tree which lays a doubt on lives of good repute? But Pyrrhus here has earned my gratitude for fetching me my fruit. So Pyrrhus filled the pear tree, as was his first intent. And once he'd finished his sweaty work, his vigor was all that spent. But still the tale went far and wide and garnered him a certain fame. Lydia was happy with this pleasant stroke of luck, and always called upon her Pyrrhus when she had some fruit to pluck. And up into the pear tree was handsome Pyrrhus sent, for there he thought of a clever plan, and this is how it went. Oh, there he thought of a clever plan, and this is how it went. was actually written in France in the 1700s, but it rapidly became very popular on this side of the Atlantic. I learned it in French immersion when I was in public school. Not that you'd know it from my French today.
Stereotypical things that you're supposed to do up the Ottawa Valley. So I said, let's play it like we would in the Sugar Shack. And she said, okay, how's that? And I said, you'll see. So the next time we played it, she saw, and she hasn't forgiven me yet, but she also hasn't said I can't do it.
The holly and the ivy, when they are both full grown, of all the trees that are in the wood, the holly bears the crown. The rising of the southern and the rhyming of the deer, the playing of the middle organ, sweet singing in the wild.
I went to meet her.
headstock.
Oh dear. Is that what you did?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, I got a chance to read a book on Gandhi, the biography of Gandhi, and it was very interesting because it was written by a French journalist who had actually spent some time with the man before he was assassinated. And it was a very interesting view of his whole life, right from his very sort of unpolitical beginnings right to being a really pivotal force of the 20th century. And it put me in mind of a lot of other outlaws and rebels who have done their little bit to try to make a difference in the world. So this one's called Hero. 3, 4. Usually drive about 10 hours and then do a show in the evening, sleep for a few hours, get up, drive 10 hours to the next place. And in 2 weeks, we managed to get all the way across the country, which was pretty neat. But on the way back, it was the last weekend of November. We had dodged all of the snow all the way across, and it caught up with us in the Rocky Mountains, which was exciting. And I will be the first to admit that I took us back along the wrong road. We should have gone back along the Trans-Canada Highway, and instead we took the very scenic route up Highway 99, which if anybody's gone up to ski in Squamish, it's the little one that winds like a ribbon all the way through the Rockies before popping out and sending you back towards Calgary.
The Trans-Canada Highway has snowplows. It's true. Highway 99 has snowplows on a biannual basis.
Sad but true. But anyways, we did make it. We started at 6 in the morning. We got snowed in, I guess, what, about at 6 at night, halfway through the Rockies. But the day that we spent going along Highway 99 was really spectacular. We stopped at 9 in the morning, partially to let Ben sort of relax, because he was driving, and it was a bit hectic.
But she was asleep.
And I was asleep. I'm sorry, how many times do I have to apologize?
I would say once a night. Or at least once a driving day.
But the view where we stopped, it was just one of these little side roadside lookouts, because nobody was fool enough to be on the road except us and a few mad truckers. So we ended up stopping, and it was a sheer cliff down about 800 feet. And we could tell there was a river down there somewhere, because you could hear it, but it was so far down you couldn't see it amongst the trees. So we looked down, and then we looked up about 2,000 or 3,000 feet at these huge snow-capped peaks. And it was an amazing experience. There was just silence everywhere. So we wanted to capture that moment. So we wrote this song. It's called 99 at 9. Let me get my drum organized here. Perfect. Have some water.
Are you ready?
No, I'm not. I'm right back. It is very dry up here. It's surprising considering it's, you know, it's ostensibly spring. But I guess we're not out of the woods yet. There, that doesn't do it, nothing at all. Slap.
Are we ready?
Yes. I have a mixture of Cornish background. Mike and I were talking about this actually. I've got Celtic background from about every area in the British Isles. Scottish, Irish, English, Welsh, and even Cornish, which is one of the very old Celtic kingdoms. The Cornish are very, very proud of their Celtic heritage, and will betide anyone who says that they are part of England, truth besides. Very much like if you go to a Scotsman and tell him it must be nice being part of England, very clear. But the Cornish even have an unofficial national anthem, which is a song from a few hundred years ago where a gentleman by the name of Trelawney, a Cornish nobleman, was arrested by English forces, taken to the Tower of London, and was going to be put to death. Except the English didn't realize how rabidly patriotic the Cornish were, and ended up with an army on their doorstep, much to their surprise. So feel free to sing along if you like this one. Sword and trusty hand, a merry heart and true. King Prince's men shall understand what Cornish men can do. Have they fixed where and when shall Trelawney die? Well, here's 20,000 Cornish men could know the reason why.
Shall Trelawney live or shall Trelawney die? Here's 20,000 Cornish men will know the reason why.
Puts a big kettle of water on to boil and puts a hot stone into it, and that's all they have to do. The first person who arrives at the party maybe brings a carrot, in it goes to the pot. The next person brings a potato, in it goes, or a sausage, in it goes. And before you know it, where nobody had arrived with enough food to feed even themselves, now you've all got a big pot of stone soup which you can share. So, rather a nice party food.
Took a punch and swore she would.
what she meant to tell us beside. Around the corner, peering, came a shy gentleman. He said, excuse me for intruding, but I'll help with all I can. The stone is in the kettle, the water's on the boil. The work is always lighter when there's many hands. The stone is in the kettle, the water's on the boil. The work is always lighter when there's many hands to join. The butcher's son declared that he would brave the cold and heat, and spent the day outdoors to turn and face the roasting meat. A mother said, I'd cook, but I'd mind the little one to feed. If he had to attend to any errands you might need. A stone.
I look different without the robes and crowns.
matter.